Now on News Talk, as part of our autumn season of documentary on News Talk, Athena Media brings us The Last Wake, an award-winning documentary presented by Colleen O'Scoley, exploring the habits we Irish have about death and dying.
A wake, to my mind, is an opportunity for people closely associated with the departed, family, friends or neighbours, who are given a last opportunity to not only say farewell to the person who's dead, but take one last look at their mortal remains.
The Irish are much better about the ritualisation of the remains. We have a sense, there's an old feeling that the soul wasn't gone until 3 days after the person died, and so the body would have to be kept company.
In the village, nobody would work for the 3 days and three nights while a corpse was being waked, and nobody would work. It was a great break.
And just that time that it allows as people start to tell the stories and as drink is imbibed and the stories get louder, and telling the good ones, the bad ones and the ugly ones, that you get a sense of all of the person and the loss.
My father's we had in the Sheriff Hall, that was like a wedding. Any members of my family that died was like a wedding. I have to be honest and say it as it is.
One of the sayings in the Irish language was, "Mas mála tú uile fá bás," if you want to be praised, you better die first.
We like to think we're good at death, able to honour the dead and give them a good send-off. But for many of us in post-Celtic Tiger Ireland, the idea of the traditional Irish wake, of kitting out the front room with an open coffin, is as remote as hedge schools and as unsettling as crew bean or coddle. Yet even if we've never been near a wake, we think we know what it is, because there's hardly an Irish writer who hasn't used it as a backdrop to drama or comedy. It's cinema's favourite cliché about being Irish. We think wake and see a smoky gathering round a casket aided by lots of drink, food and song. But just what is the story behind the Irish wake? And what are we losing in a rush for a more sanitised and private affair?
Take these, sell them. Buy some more food and drink from my tribe. At least they know how to celebrate, ignorant old crones that they are. But they know this much. A person's passing is a sacred thing and merits some kind of overdose. So serve them well and let them drink and feast and sing me to my final place. Go, look after them. You might learn something.
Alwyn Ferrey, in Marina Carr's play Woman and Scarecrow, is a dying woman determined to fund her own wake. It's a new play, haunted by a more ancient Ireland, where she says, a person's passing is a sacred thing.
I've always loved funerals. The excitement, the food, the drink, the relief on everyone's faces. Even the best behaved can't hide their glee. There's something in us that loves the harmony of seeing someone out. The pure animal delight. As if every cell in our bodies is shrieking, it wasn't me, it isn't me yet.
Waking the dead, after all, is not for the faint-hearted. As Father Éamon O'Connell, or Eddie Vartle, as he's better known, from Tírinnia and Connemara, explains.
You're supposed to stay awake, at awake. You know, that is the real meaning of it.
Eddie Vartle was a fisherman who became a priest after raising his own family and losing his wife.
The tradition was that there would be tobacco and drink, especially, and they'd wake them for 3 days and three nights. And in the village, nobody would work for the 3 days and three nights while a corpse was being waked. And nobody would work. It was a great break, and a good excuse, you know, for a lot of people to go and have a good drink. But they respected the dead very much. After the wake, when they would take the coffin out and the removal from the house, they'd put it down on three stools or four stools or four chairs outside the house in front of the door, and they would stand and take off their caps and lower their heads, but there wasn't any praying. The idea was to tell the spirit of the dead that it was time to leave, and they would have to go their way. And it was actually would be the spirit of the living telling the spirit of the dead that to go.
Gavin Arthur, anthropologist at Maynooth University, sees the wake rituals as being all about the living, allowing them to come together as a community and letting the dead go.
A wake was, and still is, a context for allowing people to come to the realization that somebody has passed on, but they're remembered. And one of the things that this new remembrance would be based on is the wake, talking about the wake. If you've had a good wake and you've had people conduct themselves well, that might include people, you know, getting horribly drunk or engaging in all sorts of activities that are not necessarily directly connected with the body. The story of the good wake is one where you're given the opportunity to say, I thought that that wake was brilliant, and this is why.
A huge part of the wake is about the rituals of process, from the washing of the body to the praise for the dead, from keening or laments to the hospitality. While Eddie Vartle's stories come from the Western Shores, in Dublin, echoes of Joyce and O'Casey are in the stories of Joe Dowling and John Gallagher in The Liberties.
For the love of the liquor, old Tim was born. And to help him on his wage day, to drop on the crather every morn. What for the dawn, you dance with your partner on the floor, you try to shake. Bend an ear to the truth, they tell you lots of fun at Finnegan's Wake.
You've heard of Finnegan's Wake, the song. The old wakes were like Finnegan's Wake. So we always were row at them. It was looked on as a time of celebration. So it was there'd be a great lot of drinking. And you'd be kept for several days at least in the house, and always plenty of food and drink. People would be beggared as a result of it.
Well, years ago, around the area in the north in the city here, when people died, there was no such thing as funeral homes or anything like that. So to take the bodies, if they died at home, there'd be people there, the mothers, the grandmothers and all, used to wash the bodies and lay them out there, and you know what I mean, in the home.
Your character would be based on how much you spent on the wake, how good the wake was. And you'd feel if you didn't give the dead person a proper wake that you'd be letting him down as well as yourself.
Yeah, well, I always remember years and years ago as a kid, when I was growing up, there'd be wakes in homes around the area, you know what I mean? And the people would sit up all night. The coffin would be laid, the body would be laid out in the coffin, and people would get a few drinks in, a few sandwiches, wherever it may be, and they'd be talking about the person all night. You know what I mean? It would be all about the person that died, and they'd be reminiscing about years ago, what the person was, how good she was, or how good he was. Little things, all stuff like that.
It was a great wake in our house. My uncle Peter died. He died suddenly in Enniscorthy, and he was brought up to Dublin, and his brother lived in England. And there was a delay in him coming over, and he was nearly a week in the house. And there was wake every night. So that would have been, when I was quite young, that would have been in the 50s.
A lady died there 2 years ago, Mary Burke, and we had a wake in the house around the coffin. All the songs she used to sing, and I started to sing song, and everyone around the coffin started singing. All her old songs, you know. You know, sang it all. And I tell you, it was great.
My aunt, his sister, she was very theatrical. She'd be screaming and crying, and that'd go on every night. When she'd remember he was dead, she might take a drink and forget it, but then she'd look over and remember and she'd start crying. And I remember that as well as anything. She'd feel sorry for feeling so good. She'd be sorry for feeling good, having taken a drink, maybe a glass of sherry. The women then didn't drink the way they drink now. A glass of sherry a woman would take, whereas the men would take the pints.
Now, Barry's a friend of ours there, 2 years ago as well, Georgie Arkins, he was great, how skinny he was. And we sang at his gravesite, When You're Smiling, as he loved that song. And I got the whole gang, and we were all, and it was happy, the way we sang it. When you're smiling, when you're smiling, the whole world smiles with you.
Good food and good drink and a good time, because they believe that that's the way you treat the dead. It was a celebration, like as I mentioned earlier about the monks. They thought it was they'd give a big feast. And it's something similar. It was probably the fear of dying.
After my father's funeral and my sister's funeral, we had, after Ryan's funeral, we had the Ripley Court. We went in there, it was like a wedding. We had the band playing. That's the way it was, like a wedding. My father's, we had in the Sheriff Hall. That was like a wedding. Any members of my family that died was like a wedding. I have to be honest and say it as it is. The North Star, we had the North Star with another sister. You know, and they're all like weddings. Great sing songs.
Oh, Danny boy, the pipes are calling. From glen to glen and down the mountainside. The summer's gone, and all of the flowers are falling. It's you must go, and I must abide.
Of course, the classic Irish wake tale is about a corpse that's not really dead. Sing retells an Iron Island story of a jealous husband who pretends to be dead in order to test his wife. The corpse that comes to life at his own wake. In Hollywood's take, in Waking Ned Devine, the corpse is dead, but the community pretends he's alive in order to share his lot of winnings.
The words that are spoken at a funeral are spoken too late for the man that is dead. What a wonderful thing it would be to visit your own funeral, to sit at the front and hear what was said. Maybe to say a few things yourself.
Wanting to be at your own funeral, to hear the laments, the tributes, the praise, it's an Irish thing, knowing how little we praise the living and how much we elevate the dead.
I heard the tradition of the queen or the crying of the dead in the Cairn area, and it was understood that it was a proper thing to do. And there were people who had nobody really to cry them, and local women would come in and do the cry. They would compose verses as they cried and praise the person, give them a good send-off.
You would have had people who may even have been professional caners, people who would arrive and in exchange for money or other goods would take up position somewhere in the room near the body and cry or wail or keen for the duration of the wake. To give the, not only to create an atmosphere, so to speak, but to, I suppose, form a kind of a sonic backdrop to the fact that there was the remains of somebody who's gone.
Keening, Kitty Ní Ghealachóir.
While the grave was being opened, the women sat down among the flat tombstones, bordered with a pale fringe of early bracken.
James Millington Synge, Aran Islands, read by Bosco Hogan.
And began the wild keen, or crying for the dead. Each old woman, as she took her turn in the leading recitative, seemed possessed for the moment with a profound ecstasy of grief, swaying to and fro, and bending her forehead to the stone before her, while she called out to the dead with a perpetually recurring chant of sobs.
The road from Kerry that time was through the mountains down what we call Nabonabon. There's a rock there called Carrig na Gléití. An old woman, Colleen na Gléití, would stand up, and that it was her duty to do watch, and she'd watch out and watch out all day long, and then when she'd see funeral coming she'd call out, and all the keening women would gather in then, so they'd be ready for the funeral when it would come down, and they'd keen the funeral up into the graveyard.
Pádraig Ó Riada of Cúlé, Sean O'Riordan's son, composed the music for the famous lament Cuina Arti Laoire by Eileen Dóibín Chonnell. It's an 18th century love lament for her slain husband, striking in its earthy passion and anger.
Machara is moon too. is not Cretchin Uha, non Cogger Foorish, not on scale fair Fua Garachala Husa, near Rome soon them. Och vid the lin of Rovores, the hastig she Ua I the Horchan soonish. A queen and an aeste, will ain ven in air and no lean a grain, a heenach a tavlish, the verach tree lego, nor rockach la cravaca in ye arty lair a thorn shall tract o vagin in aegum.
It came through her from the moment she started to keen him. And it's probably one of the most famous love poems in the world. It's an extraordinary piece of poetry which she composed extempore. People that time lived remembering everything orally. It was collected in 1812 from a woman called Norini Hindile, but lots more of it stayed in the community. So I felt an urge to set it to music. The choir here is a men's choir that my father had put together, and I didn't want to break that because that's the male energy. So I started a women's choir then for this, and they're a completely different energy, female energy.
Most quines or laments were of the moment, spontaneous, and are now lost.
Some women were very good at it. They could compose verses and beautiful sayings.
Father Éamon O'Conéala, Tírania.
I heard some of it. I had maybe three or four times, you know, I heard it crying, and they were good too. Since the last queen I heard, you know, there are two generations gone since, and I think they have lost it, really. They won't do it anymore.
The queen, they say, suffered with the famine. There were too many bodies to wake and bury, too many bodies to lament and keen.
Before the famine happened, this was a healthy country with 8 million people, and you opened the door, you could hear people laughing and shouting and talking and walking and making noise because there were so many of them there. And they weren't gathered in cities, they were scattered all over the land.
Padre O'Riada from Coolé.
And then this bloody awful thing happened, the famine, and they all either died or disappeared in a very short space of time. So the country became quiet.
The actions of people near death in the Great Famine.
Dr. Gavin Arthur.
One of their main concerns would be to find some state or other facility where the prospect of being buried in the ground in a coffin, or at least with a religious ritual, was all that concerned them.
The story of the Irish Wake is rooted in a pre-Christian world of spirits and even superstitions or pishrogi. There's a tension there, according to Gavin Arthur, between the pagan world of the Wake and the Christian rites of church and grave. The Wake is about a sense of primitive chaos, of wildness, of respect, even fear for the underworld of the dead, for spectres like the Banshee. The religious ceremony, on the other hand, is about a soul being returned to God.
You'll have people who really want to celebrate the person in a social sense, and then you'll have a religious organisation wanting to maintain those very clear and very strict boundaries that help that religious organisation to maintain its identity or its presence.
That tension between the Wake and the Catholic Church is what led to the construction of the removal.
I remember the parish priest saying it would be very fitting to leave the person in the church for one night to be in the company of our Lord, which was in the tabernacle, and then to have Mass the following day before the funeral.
Father Éamon O'Conéala, parish priest, Tírania.
The tradition has changed in the last number of years, but now it usually goes to a funeral parlour for a certain period, and then to the church. In some cases, they take them home to the house and wake them for one night in the house, recite the rosary at maybe 10 o'clock.
On Raglan Road, on an autumn day, I saw her for
The long drawn-out nature of Awake helps us grieve and accept death, according to Dr. Helen Greeley at UCG, the author of a study on bereavement. For Dr. Susan Delaney of the Irish Hospice Foundation, it's about time to tell stories and to come together.
So part of the function of the wake, when the body was there, that it allowed people that time. People start to tell the stories, and as drink is imbibed and the stories get louder, and telling the good ones, the bad ones and the ugly ones, that you get a sense of all of the person and the loss. It's important for us in our grief to have it witnessed. It matters to us that other people know about our loss. And that was a lot of the function of the wake. It was a coming together. It prescribed what was going to happen. It involved the feeding and the drinking and the staying with family through that difficult time. It also then allowed for the expression of all kinds of emotion beyond, the of course, the shock and the sorrow.
You see, sometimes you're better off crying. If something goes wrong, you're better off crying and feeling sad about it. If you don't do so at the time, it's going to have it takes you longer to recover in some cases. So there was a reason for it.
Undertaker Gus Nichols admits that he didn't understand the wake himself until his own father died.
I didn't really get why people wanted to look at a dead person. I didn't understand it. I didn't see what could be gained from it until it happened to me. And I remember looking down at my father, and he died suddenly, and it was very distressing. And but when I saw him there, and he looked peaceful, it just, I can't explain it, but to me it just told me, well, that's it, he's gone, he ain't waking up. Perhaps seeing the person at home in the coffin not going to wake up is an even stronger message to that bereaved person. Well, you know, that's it. You know, we have to, life has to continue somehow.
I shouldered a kind of manhood, stepping in to lift the coffins of dead relations. They had been laid out in tinted rooms, their eyelids glistening, their dough-white hands shackled in rosary beads. Their puffed knuckles had unwrinkled, the nails were darkened, the wrists obediently sloped. The dulse brown shroud, the quilted satin cribs. I knelt courteously, admiring it all, as wax melted down and veined the candles. The flames hovering to the women hovering behind me. And always in a corner, the coffin lid, its nail heads dressed with little gleaming crosses. Dear soapstone masks, kissing their igloo brows, had to suffice before the nails were sunk and the black glacier of each funeral passed away.
Seamus Heaney's poem, Funeral Rites.
This is a country where people, as you know, go to funerals. They're big public social events in many cases.
Gus Nichols, undertaker.
If you ask your colleagues in London, we tell them that, there's people who attend funerals because they don't know the person who has died, but they know the son of the person who either might work with them. They don't get that at all, the UK. You know, they think that's, well, they're just taking time off work. Whereas here it's expected. TDs, I think, are you know, it's part of their electioneering strategy. They must attend every single funeral in their parish or in their area, otherwise they'd be shot.
You're listening to The Last Wake on News Talk 106 to 108.
I've never actually been to one of these wakes in Dublin, but I know that people have them. Fortunately, I haven't been because our family has stayed alive very healthily for the last 20 years.
From a very early age, our whole family will be brought to a wake, whether it be a friend of our parents or whether it be a relation. Even if we didn't go into the wake, we'd sit outside the wake house and we'd talk to the locals. So it never shocked me, or seeing a dead body would never have shocked me.
Around a death is when it's a very painful thing to be part of a family. So in a way, these rituals help us through that painfulness.
The process of bringing someone home for the wake will happen in certain cases, but certainly not everybody. And for some people, they wouldn't hear of it. There's no way they'd have the person back in the house. They'd think you'd be nuts. What would the neighbours think? A hearse in a coffin going up the drive. Help! Call the police. So, you know, it's horses for courses.
Radio Kerry has been informed of the following deaths: Gerald Huzzy, Avonlea, Sportsfield Road, Sneem, reposing at his residence today from 2 until 8 p.m, followed by removal to St. Mary Prendeville, Parklands, Tralee, and formerly of Flemby Ballymacelligot. Removal this evening at 6:30 from Glazier's Funeral Home to the Church of the Immaculate Conception, Rathas. Requiem Mass for Eileen Prendeville will take place on Tuesday at 11 a.m. Private cremation will follow. No flowers, please. Donations, if desired, to the Kerry Hospice Foundation.
While our closeness to the wake tradition may be going in Ireland, a funeral still stops us. From the local radio death notices to the crowds at a removal, we still take that seriously.
The death of somebody near to you, it overrides everything, or it should.
Dr. Gavin Arthur.
Certainly, if everybody's concerned, as I suppose we all are, about our own deaths, we want to make sure that when our time comes, everybody else drops what they're doing and comes running.
Certainly the three Dockers parishes would have a big community tradition. More rural, if you like, than sort of the middle-class Dublin funeral.
Gus Nichols, undertaker.
An expression of that would be seen in when we bring people to churches the night before, that the friends and family will carry the coffin down the streets to the church. I always find it interesting when I see the middle class on their way back out of the city from their jobs kind of looking slightly askance and askew at this tradition, and it goes on. I quite like it because it's a little moment for them to make the traffic wait for them.
There is something wonderful about a death. How everything shuts down and all the ways you thought you were vital are not even vaguely important. Your husband can feed the kids. He can work the new oven. He can find the sausages in the fridge, after all. And his important meeting was not important, not in the slightest, and the girls will be picked up from school and dropped off again in the morning. Your eldest daughter can remember her inhaler, and your youngest daughter will take her gym kit with her. And it is just as you suspected. Most of the stuff that you do is just stupid, really stupid.
Anne Enright from The Gathering. Her modern-day family drama centred around a housewake in Dublin.
I'm expecting the house to be crammed, but Bea shakes her head slightly by the door. Just us, really, she says. A few neighbours. What do you expect, I want to say? Who's going to come and look at a dead body in your living room when there isn't even a decent glass of wine in the house? But I do not say this. Tom is behind me. He's taken my elbow and is using it like a joystick to steer me around her. And I would be annoyed, but his grip is so old-fashioned. No one holds you like that anymore, except Frank at work, who was gay and is now dead. The room is almost empty. There's no one here that I can talk to about children's lungs or carpet colours, about weaves and nubbles and seagrass or percentages of wool. Dead or alive, Liam does not care about such things. I sit down. They have put him in a navy blue suit with a shirt like a garter. You would have liked that.
Yet while Enright cast her modern Celtic Tiger Dublin against a wake, she admits she's never been near one herself, and her impression of a wake is all from other people.
I have friends who've had wakes like this. I find it a distinctive thing to do and a very interesting thing to do. There's also a kind of sympathy in the way we keep the body company, a sympathy with the body for being before it turns into trash, you know, that there is a residual sense that whatever it is, the body is, the body has been loved as much as the person who occupied it. Or not as much, but to a degree. The armchairs and the sofa have been pushed back, but Mrs. Clooney, who has paused to pray, has chosen to sit in one of the hard chairs brought in from the kitchen. Kitty is on duty by the far wall in case a mourner should be left indecently alone with the corpse. In case the corpse should be left indecently alone. She looks at me as I perch on the arm of the sofa and she rolls her eyes. After a minute, she comes over and says quietly, "Will you stay?" "No," I say. She does not understand. The whole business is finished for me now. It is beyond finished. I just want to get the damn thing buried and out of the way.
Anne Enright.
I just dropped in to see you all.
And today, there's still a strong tradition of the wake in Donegal, as Lachlan Hart tells us.
The most recent wake back home would have been when I was in sixth year of secondary school. A local guy had inhaled glue and passed away on his own in the garage, and everybody knew him. He was a really outgoing person, nice fella. And the 3 days after the wake, everybody went to the wake and everybody got together. It was good bonding time. But then the whole college of 700 students all went to the funeral, and everybody went to the actual burial as well. For a young guy at the age of 17, 18, to be able to cry with your friends and mourn a friend, it was pretty moving. And only recently, since I've come to Dublin, people would be shocked to hear that I've even held hands of a dead person or kissed them on the forehead to say my final goodbye. Whereas here, most of my friends haven't even seen a dead body or got to say goodbye to their grandfather or their grandmother or even a friend. And it just shocks me that they don't have the chance to say their final goodbye.
For all your hearts are like your mountains in the homes of Donegal.
Last I was there, which was, let's say, up to a couple of years ago, I'm sure hasn't changed.
Anthropologist Lawrence Taylor from Maynooth University.
I found wakes to be exactly pretty much as they had been 20 years ago, 30 years ago in the communities that I went to. They still had them in the house. They still had, you know, the tea and sandwiches and plates full of cigarettes. And tobacco is always an interesting offering. I mean, generations ago, it used to be a pile of tobacco and people would fill their pipes, and decades ago that was replaced with cigarettes, and so you just had whole platters of cigarettes, and you'd find people who didn't smoke or who smoked very rarely would take a cigarette.
But are we Irish that different from the rest of the world?
In Vienna, for example, in Austria, people will tell you that, you know, that Austrians are obsessed with death, and Ireland comparatively is famous for the neglect of the dead. That is, the emphasis is on the ritual moment, the big, you know, the wake, the big funeral, then you talk about the dead. But the visit to the grave side, although, you know, you do have that, is not nearly as compelling a central thing as it would be, say, in Italy or Greece.
Look at other cultures, they think we're all crazy.
Gus Nichols.
The UK, they just don't really go in for this at all. The person's gone, that's it. There might be an identification prior to a post-mortem to confirm that that person is Joe Bloggs. They might have a very restricted viewing in a funeral home for half an hour or an hour, you know, and you can have it on Thursday at 3 o'clock. But they think we're all nuts here, and viewings and chapels and having the body at home, and they can't understand it, think we're all crazy.
We were different from the British.
Father Eamon O'Connella.
You know, we would really keep a stiff upper lip and never show a sign of or a tear or anything like that. You know, our tradition was so different that we show our emotions.
The British, I decide, only bury people when they are so dead you need another word for it. The British wait so long for a funeral that people gather not so much to mourn as to complain that the corpse is still hanging around. There is a queue, they say on the phone. The British love a queue. They do not gather until the emotion is gone.
Anne Enright from The Gathering.
I mean, the Irish have always been great at funerals. The wake and the funeral, the big ritual moment, and then the memory of that, the verbalization rather than, I would say, the materialization is interesting. That is, you know, much bigger on the stories about the dead than monuments and visits to monuments of the dead.
John McGahern, in That They May Face the Rising Sun, captures the reality of a rural death and wake.
They closed the ears and the nostrils with the cotton wool, and when they turned him over to close the rectum, dentures fell from his mouth. The rectum absorbed almost all the cotton wool. The act was as intimate and warm as the act of sex. The innate sacredness of each single life stood out more starkly in death than in the whole of its natural life. To see him naked was also to know what his character and clothes had disguised, the wonderful physical specimen he had been, that perfect coordination of hand and eye that had caused so many wildfowl to fall like stones from the air had been no accident. That hand, too, had now fallen.
Undertaker Gus Nichols handles the practicalities to wakes.
We were always slightly nervous of doing that because, unfortunately, a deceased person, the body, the process of decomposition, that natural process begins very quickly. It begins immediately once death occurs. And that can lead to problems when you're bringing someone back to a house if there hasn't been hygienic treatment of the deceased. And for many years, really, I suppose the Irish funeral directors didn't have those skills, but now they do, and now we do. And we're quite happy to bring people back to the house for two, three, four days, whatever they need. There could be a son in Australia and they're waiting for him to get back. And nine times out of ten, we're quite happy to do that and accept that as a role.
I always remember years and years ago, a person died in the community and rigor mortis set in. I always remember that.
Joe Dowling, local community worker, Dublin.
You'd hear the hearsemen, the men in the funeral parlour coming up and breaking the leg or breaking the knee joint because it was sticking up. You know, and you could hear them cracking the bone to stretch it out into the coffin, stuff like that. Memories of that I have already. And there would have been places trying to get coffins up and get coffins out. We did have to stand the coffin up, even with the body in it, and turn it around corners and all like that. Stuff like that. It was all because with tenement houses as well, and the complexes wouldn't be like they are today, you know what I mean? There's a little bit more room to get stuff in, and I've often seen bodies getting taken out the window where they'd have to take the window out where they wouldn't be able to go down the stairs. And some days this happens still, and some situations that happens around this area still where they wouldn't be able to get the coffin in to take it out the window.
I think the big noticeable changes in my time here, and I'm here 11 years, would be the non-religious funeral and the percentage of that in terms of the work that we do every year. How the traditional Roman Catholic funeral, the evening in the church before is not as prevalent as it was, and people are tending towards funerals. It's not the majority, but it's increasing. They're tending towards funerals happening all in one day. And then the other big change in my time here would be the level of cremation. It would have gone up from literally no more than 10 or 15% in Dublin to now approaching 40. And that's within that 10 years.
Now they go to the funeral parlour. It's rare you see a person laid out in their own house.
John Gallagher.
They do now what they wouldn't think of doing before, cremation. That was a very dirty word. Now it's becoming more regular. More and more people are being cremated. In the past, you'd hear somebody who was cremated, you'd hear somebody saying the word cremated, you know, as if it was a terrible thing to happen.
The statistics are something like 90% people are cremated in England and about 10% here, so it's quite different.
Dr. Susan Delaney, Irish Hospice Foundation.
One of the things I think we've become aware of is that people don't have a lot of information about cremation and if you're going to a cremation, what exactly to expect. So it is one of the things we'll address in the Hospice Foundation is to actually do up a leaflet. Our position would be that people are aware of the choices and that they have a little bit of time to think. What we're up against is our death denial. Who wants to think about it?
But what of the drunkenness of stage and screen? The irony is that the rural tradition is more about tea and sandwiches than alcohol.
First of all, everybody nearly drops what they're doing and whether it be work or family function, everybody will take the time in order to go to the wake.
Loughlin Hart.
And at the wake, usually the mothers and the sisters will be making teas and coffees, and the guys won't necessarily be drinking much, but they might, like the older people might have their pipes, and or they might have a whiskey, one or two beers, maybe just to relax. But it's not a big, happy kind of a party. It's more of a quiet celebration of them passing. And it's tea, sandwiches, nothing too over the top. It's kind of a nice get-together, an intimate occasion.
And as Eddie Vartla says, if there was a little putting, it was to keep the wakers, those who keep the vigil by the dead body, awake through the night.
The reason for this tobacco and the pipes, the clay pipes as well, and maybe a few drinks, and so that the people who stay awake can keep talking all night. It is helping, I suppose, the people of the house, you know, to get over their grief. Sometimes they went too far with the drinking, and one night there was trouble in the house. They started, some ruction started over, I don't know, it was about throwing the cuiron or the clods of turf or whatever, you know, trying to keep people awake, but some trouble started, and the priest said that from the altar the next Sunday he told them that they'd have to cut out the drink at the wake. Be no more drink, you know, that wasn't a proper way to respect the dead.
Yet the image of the wake as a rowdy drunken brawl persists.
In the little bits of research that have been done, they looked at just attitudes towards death and dying in Ireland, and they were actually quite opposites, you know, of people that feeling that the wake was a wonderful place to really start off the bereavement process, to people feeling it was very rowdy and involved a lot of drink. So people tended to have quite polarised ideas about some of those traditions. But I do think anecdotally that people have a new interest in it and are exploring ways of making the funeral more personal to them and to their situation.
So what is the future of the Irish wake? Will it persist solely as a quaint image from novels and cinema? Something we have a folk memory of, but have forgotten what it means or where it comes from? A recent flurry of media coverage raises the hair that the EU might ban formaldehyde, which would end the tradition of open coffins. But formaldehyde won't be phased out now until a safe replacement is found. So the wake may be technically safe, but will today's generation want to sing their ancestors to their final resting place? There are signs that the wake is enjoying something of a revival, with people opting for a more personalised and intimate farewell.
It's not all doom and gloom, and I know from some of our own research in the Hospice Foundation, we're still quite good at doing funerals. Yes, we have let go of some of the traditions. Life moves on. We're now a more multicultural society. But there was wisdom in those traditions. And we are seeing anecdotally maybe a move back to some of them or a reworking of them.
I think it's a good thing. I think the way the Irish approach this is healthy. It's a more open event. It's in some cases it's a social gathering, and it's a good chance for people to meet. It's a good chance for people to talk about the person and mark the moment, which is what a funeral is.
So a wake is very much a part of the world of the living. It just so happens that it's organised around one of those great passages, that movement from here to there, you know, the moving beyond the point where the sea meets the sky, or whatever you have it.
Thank you.
The Last Wake was first broadcast on News Talk in 2008 and is a PPI-nominated Documentary of the Year. It was presented by Colleen O'Scully, produced by Helen Shaw and edited by Lachlan Hart. The documentary was made with the funding support of the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland and the TV licence fee.